Shine bright like a bulb. Welcome to the Stay Alive Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Geoffrey Kabagambe from the Center for Law and Innovation, CERTA Foundation. We have a special guest today joining us, Adekola Thompson, a legal associate at NLP NG & Co. in Nigeria. Adekola is not just your typical legal practitioner. He is a results-driven professional with a unique blend of expertise in law, information technology, blockchain solutions, and economic policy. Adekola specializes in researching and implementing innovative IT and blockchain solutions tailored to the unique needs of each client. Today, he's here to enlighten us on legal tech and, most importantly, an African perspective. So let's dive right into it and welcome Adekola Thompson to the CLI podcast. Mr. Adekola, welcome to the CLI podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Geoffrey. Thank you for having me.
Yes. How is your day going? Just give us briefly, how is Nigeria feeling today? Lagos, I presume?
Yes. As you know, Lagos is very busy, very busy. There's a lot of activities. And it's hot. The weather is quite hot these days. So thankful for air conditioning.
Okay. And it's the season, I presume, yet in West Africa. It's the season, the hot season in that region.
Yeah. So we're currently making the transition from dry season, which is called Hamadan, to, you know, rainy season. Yes, really hot.
Yes, I mean, soon my colleagues and I will be flying in, so we'll be careful to time the season that's not going to burn our skin a little bit more than the one here.
Don't worry, nothing a little sunscreen wouldn't solve.
Yes, okay. So, Mr. Adekola, we're very excited to have you here. I mean, your expertise and knowledge is that which the continent has been looking for the short past. And today we'll be very happy to get a lot from you. Feel free to share with us the areas that we might not even know exist in your area of expertise. Well, so if you don't mind, I'd like to begin with you. We ask a few questions and you share with us. Are you okay? We can go on with the questions?
Yeah, sure. No problem.
Yeah. First, could you share your journey into law and what motivated you to specialize in technology?
So my journey into law was fundamentally driven by maritime and shipping, actually. That was what spurred me on because funny enough, I watched Captain Phillips and I was studying international and I was fascinated by these pirates. And so my dissertation was on piracy as an act of terrorism using the Gulf of Aden as a case study. Found this fantastic resource. Anyhow, long and short, I pivoted into technology during the lockdown. And I think that's when a lot of people had their eureka moments as well. Because you had to pause and consider where the world was going to and what needed to be done. So you remain relevant, and not just for relevance, but to be able to contribute to that growth and development. So that was where I was born. I had taken cyber law because I was always interested in technology, but I never considered it as a full-on career path. But the more I became engrossed in blockchain technology and Web3 technologies as a whole, that's when I went down the rabbit hole. And I think I'm still very much in it and digging further. I don't really think I want to anytime soon.
So you're in an endless sea of knowledge now. You do not want to to go to the show anymore?
No. There's no need. We just have knowledge. That's where we are now.
Yes. You mentioned Captain America, and I remember a few days ago speaking with my team, and the first thing we looked at was the meme that appears. Look at me now. I am.
Okay.
So, yes. It's quite an interesting shift. I mean, from maritime law and counterterrorism into tech. And the motivation is actually, what motivated you has been also a motivating factor for many people. That period of COVID had everyone re-examine their life priorities, their choices, what, where, when, and how they can bring something to the table. I'd like also to find out, so what aspects at the intersection of law and tech are most critical, in your opinion, and why?
So for a very obvious place to start would be policy formulation, policy advisory. I really consider what I'm doing to be a most necessary endeavor. And why I say this is because, and it's not just me that's doing it, right? I know the CLI very much has their own skin in the game with policy formulation. But it's very important to draw a bridge between the regulators and the innovators. And once that link is established, and I describe it as a bridge, right? So you keep running back and forth, but there are people who have that ability or capacity to run back and forth, because you need to understand what the innovators are saying and what they intend to achieve and how they intend to achieve it. Then also it's like being able to speak two languages. I think it's almost like a Duolingo type situation. You subscribe and you learn Spanish, you learn English, you know English already. So you have to learn, want to, speak to a Spaniard and communicate effectively. So that's really where it is, so that one doesn't overburden the other, and that
concept. Yeah. And you mentioned something very interesting, the bridge between regulators and innovators. And also from CLI, one of the things we do, of course, is, do policy research to inform the makers, to inform the policymakers. And in that particular area, legal tech, where things intersect, law and tech, there is quite a gap, there's a room, there's so much to innovate, or there's so much to look into. And when you mention regulators and innovators, creating a bridge for them, I actually, this resonates well with us. And I do think, and yes, I agree 100%, that being that who bridges the two is a big contributing factor. It's a critical part of this whole journey of, transforming Africa in the legal tech area, especially. So what do you think are the biggest hurdles your country faces when it comes to the adoption of technology? One, I think you mentioned something about, the policymakers and the innovators being a part, and you have to create the bridge. But I do believe, yes, there is quite a number of challenges that exist. Please enlighten us.
There are a number of them, and I think I'll just highlight two. So first would be a mindset. There needs to be a reorientation of the mind when you hear things like Web3, or you hear blockchain, you hear crypto. There needs to be a complete reorientation of the value these technologies bring to the ecosystem, our economies. And the second would be infrastructure, which is a major challenge here in Nigeria. And just to highlight two ends of that. Within that would be energy and data centers. So data centers are crucial to providing co-location services, which in turn enable businesses to digitize their processes and add their, you know, modus operandi within the economy. And we have a shortage of that, given the things we see. But while that is going on, that you also have the power requirements for data centers. On our own in Nigeria, for instance, we require minimum 12,000 megawatts of power generation to even be, to say, let's just say to break even across the country, right? But the federal government is only able to produce 4 out of 12.
That's like a quarter.
Yeah. You can see it's bad. It's a bad situation. But there are quite a number of investments that come in. Our firm even handles quite a number of those, like universal energy facilities and the mini grid solutions, right? But these are often towards catering towards local communities that don't have access to energy. And the truth, it just seem insensitive when you say, it doesn't make sense for you to rush to provide infrastructure, which is a data center, with power, when people in their houses who are going to benefit or use those services provided by the data centers don't have power to charge their phones in their houses.
Of course, yes. It's priorities for them.
Yes. The disparities are too wide. But it's a very multi-pronged approach. So it's not a one person does everything type of situation. You need a multi-pronged, multifaceted approach to solving these issues. People need to, those are an energy sector need to be on top of their game, and those working, the private investors and the government regulators, creating tax incentive
for of course.
To come through into the country as well. And that in places where, and also within the consideration of adopting renewable energy measures, which is where the world is going to as well. And you talk about ESG compliance. Which would be important to us because we're trying to get funding, right? But you know, another interesting fact is the other day I saw an invention by, I think, is it MIT? I think it's MIT. They have created these solar panels that were, you could roll them out. It's almost like you just roll them out and stick them on the surface. And they were able to function with the same photovoltaic technology that you find on the large panels that were, you know, that have on solar, you find on solar farms or at the top of people's buildings. What that does is that it really mitigates the costs of generating renewable energy, at least on the solar end of things. Yeah. So everyone needs, and this is why anyone who's going to be working as a regulator in any of these industries needs to be focused on what the latest technology, because what some of these do is that they present much cheaper alternatives to things that already seem like a very uphill task. So that's one end, and that's really just energy and data centers and meeting the basic.
You mentioned something quite interesting, and this is something that has an integral, it's an integral part that determines where Africa goes. I mean, from now, it should have started a long time ago, and that is mindset. Mindset beginning with the governments, beginning with even the common man. Mindset. What do we think? How do you perceive this new thing? New. I put in quotation marks because it might be new to us, but has been long existent in many other parts of the world and also developed a lot faster and much earlier. So mindset, yes, that's is a big contributing factor to how legal tech, to even how the community is recipient of the idea of getting those data centers. You know, if a common man is saying, you know what, I just want electricity for my house, how do you begin to convince that individual that, you know what, we need this energy to use it in this particular area that will benefit you in this way? And ultimately, you know, you are trying to convince this individual that, you know, the benefit for you in the long run is much, much bigger than simply having a bulb in the house to light your sitting room or to light your lobby. And you mentioned data centers. One time I was having a discussion with Frank. I think you know him already. And he asked, Geoffrey, do you know how many data centers we have on this continent? And I couldn't tell. What I know is that first I was like, what's a data center? And that's how I became curious. And when you mentioned that we do not have sufficient and we need more and we even need investment into that, it brings me back to that same question. Who is supposed to do this? How are they supposed to do it? Most importantly now, I see this and you mentioned it. Everyone having a hand in participating. You have the private sector, you have the government working together to get this done, which I think also, which would bring me to my next question, and they are quite attached, is, are there any notable legal tech startups or initiatives in Nigeria that you believe are making a significant impact or have the potential to do so in this particular area?
Wow. So the legal tech startups that I'm aware of, right? You find a lot of fintech and last mile payment solution fintechs. Oh, well, startups in Nigeria. And in fact, there's even a fintech association that a number of multiple stakeholders are part of, from both public and private sector. So it's meant to be a forum where these sort of regulatory issues need to be discussed, right? Mm-hmm. So Nigeria is currently very big on fintech. There are quite a number of health tech solutions as well. But anyone who's making significant strides outside of fintech, none notable to me at least. And why this is so is because, as you mentioned before, the orientation boils down to, how does this benefit me? I found this very, I'll tell you a brief story. So I attended an event where there was a panel discussion on, an infrastructure development, blockchain infrastructure development came. And they got some notable, influential political and private sector individuals into the room to just discuss what their technology was about. Now, I mean, I know, I understand what blockchain technology is, I understand what it can do, I see the vision, and I was enthused at the idea of some of the solutions they were able to provide, given the universal blockchain problems that, you know, have been plaguing the industry for years. Now, they came and said, oh, they want to do this in Nigeria and everything. But some person asked something very important. He said, look, you said all these things, because these guys had a lot of sound technical explanations, which I understood, but they didn't, right? And he said, how much? How do I make money from this? What? I mean, it may sound like a greedy thing, right? But in other words, what he's asking is, how do I extract value from everything you've said? And it's ironic because when you talk about Web3, it is about extracting value from the internet. It is the internet of value, being able to convey value across the internet from Web3, which Web2, which was just information, right? And I had to sort of step in. Now, I'm not on the panel. I wasn't on the panel, but I presented my solution as a question just for him to be at ease. And what I did say was, you know, being able to reduce an application procedure, regulatory application procedure that would take, or process that would take a couple days or weeks, to reduce it to a few hours and maybe even a couple minutes at best, right? So they were staring at me and were like, how would you be able to do that? And I said, so now that is the value. You save time, and everything that technology does is an enabler. And that's what it should be. And that's how it should be treated, as an enabler to expedite more work. You need to do things quicker, meaning you're able to you take more on, you do more work faster, then you can also offset it with being able to spend time with your family. And those things are very important as well. So, I know that the implications of not taking these steps are far and wide reaching, because the world is very much going there. And if Africa doesn't get its act together, a lot of the things that we claim and say, like the Agenda 2063 by the AU, right?
Yes.
There will not be. Now, I must commend Rwanda for very much being on top of his game by supporting everything that the AFCFTA is doing, by participating in the Guided Trade Initiative and facilitating trade through Rwanda Air. Being convey goods from, say, Ghana to Kigali, provided that the person has met all the requisite compliance requirements for trade under the rules of origin and blah, blah, blah. Now, that is something that requires willpower and determination, because it's a sustained effort. And I must also commend the fact, or note the fact, that Africa, I keep saying this, we did not have an industrial revolution. So growth cannot necessarily be compared to another country. Now, even China, because the fortunate difference between us and China, while very similar in that they were nowhere close to developing, to being a developed country then, they closed their borders for a prolonged period of time. They sent out their people to the West. They learned the skills, developed and got the knowledge, came back and began to develop the same in their country, right? but they shut their borders for a long time, which isn't something we can afford to do in today's highly globalized economy.
Yes.
If you do that, you are shooting yourself in the foot. Say, oh no, I just want to read in my corner and study hard and I'll pass. No. Open up and discuss with other people and share knowledge, and those solutions will come. So we need to adopt a very, very, very pragmatic approach. The era of, no, wait, let me sort it out. Let me think about it first.
Mm.
Think, very important, right? Consider all the variables before jumping and making a decision. However, it's not something that you can do or take excessive time to do, which is, this is for governments. For me, this is, I'm saying this to governments, and I'm saying it to private business owners and investors who are very used to the brick and mortar way of doing things. It used to work. It had its time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still value in applying some of those measures and skills in today's context. However, be pragmatic. Mm-hmm. And the more you begin to adopt digital solutions, the wider your reach, and the more secure a lot of your things are going to be over time. And I'm just, there are quite so many things I'm trying not to venture into, but I'll just stop there before I go into something else.
No, thank you. We're very happy. I mean, we're happy to learn as much as we can, as I said at the beginning. And yes, it does make a lot of sense when you bring in the different, parts of society that needs to participate in this. Yes, please.
Sorry, I just remembered something as well. You know, so Nigeria, I read a report that Nigeria has, our internet penetration rate is about 45.5%. Now, when you cross-reference of that rate with the number of the increase in the adoption of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, Nigeria was the highest in sub-Saharan Africa. And that's with an internet penetration rate of 45.5%. So what that says is that it indicates there's a lot of potential. The stats, while some people may begin to argue and say, oh no, where did you get your stats from? That's all fine and good, right? But they are very clear. I think that was the adoption of technology. That was from Chainalysis, which is a leading report source of information.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was just something I wanted to add very quickly.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you very much. Now, amidst all of this, what does your firm, ALPNG, play when it comes to advancing the adoption of technology in Nigeria or even in Africa?
At ALP, NG and Co., what we do have is a product called AlphaLex. It will soon be released to the wider public. It is a platform to enable MSMEs gain access to legal support to start up their business, right? So the simple contract, simple agreements that they need just to get you and also the incorporation of your business, the very basic stuff, right? So this is what it's what we offer at the moment, and it's going to further within that, it's going to include a community that we intend to span across Africa over time, because we're Pan-African focused firm. So these are, this is one major way that we are working within the ecosystem to make, to, you know, add value, so to speak. So yeah, just keep your eyes peeled for AlphaLex. Let you know.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we can't wait. As soon as you roll out, we'll be clicking. Yes. And how important is collaboration between legal professionals and technology experts in innovation and development in Africa? Just please share an example.
Oh, this is very, extremely important. My goodness, I can't even emphasize on how important it is. So having sit downs and engagements with personnel or individuals on both sides is very important, or creating avenues for dialogue, which is something CLI has been able to do, you know, and I very much commend you all on that, because I've been looking for a place where these sort of sentiments can be expressed properly. Now, within context, there was this program, and I think, yes, it's the same one I attended then. And I think one way is by having events and talking to people, ensuring that you are well informed about what the technology can do, and not just not just going off what someone else says. So the research is very important. Yes. I have spent a lot of time going through what it can do. But what I found is it's not every technical expert that can communicate to their audience effectively. Being able to maybe in some ways serve as a mouthpiece and enlighten others on what it can be. And thought leadership is another way through which we endorse this or make contributions to this wave that we intend to see span across the continent. So writing articles like this, even this podcast, right? And gathering that knowledge and gathering as many people as can contribute to that wealth of information. So an example would be that day. It was very interesting. And why I say this is because you have, the room was full of a lot of heavy hitters, as you would say. But I wouldn't just say, oh, because they're of a different generation, of which they were, right? An older, I think they were boomers, baby boomers. Or maybe older, no, they were baby boomers. and explaining it. And while they were listening to these guys, I could see that they were lost. I could see people using their phones. I could see people were disinterested. At least some were trying to follow at first, but they couldn't. And I felt bad for the guys on stage who were communicating, because while they were talking, I think I was the only one who was hearing them. I was the only one who could understand what they were saying. So it's a language. And if we're going to make any significant strides in this, it's not everyone that would be able to understand it. What I find the legal profession often does is it's very traditional and slow-paced. So if he doesn't understand something, it would just condemn it as though it's in and of itself a bad thing or useless. Mm. But we need to incline our eyes or all our senses to this, because this is where the world is going. I know Kigali talks about the fourth industrial revolution, very much stemming from the World Economic Forum. And when you consider the many issues that need to be sorted out within Africa, right? Yeah. Have non-tariff barriers on the continent that, and non-tariff barriers, so meaning like the likes of customs officials just not doing what they're supposed to do to facilitate trade across borders. It's very neat, corrupt individuals in certain places, you know. These are the many things that I believe that adopting technology can solve.
Yes.
Cuts a lot of those leakages out and everything to where it needs to go. Yes. So we are actually fighting, or what we are striving to achieve would be, it will be contended against. And that's to be expected, because once people can't see, well, at least the corrupt people can't see how they benefit or how they can usurp the system, right? Mm. Condemn it. Mm. That's something we're working on. We're working our way around it. I'm trying to see how we can make it happen, and without them knowing that it happened. And when it happens, it's like, oh my God, where is this? I thought it's like, oh, you're out, bro.
Yes. Yes. If you cannot go through it, go around it until you get it. Yes, yes. And I mean, you mentioned non-tariff barriers. I just wanted to, one of them should be AFTA. And I just wanted to ask, could you please share insights on AFTA, and in particular, the digital protocol? Does the protocol have the capacity to revolutionize technology adoption in Africa or not?
So the digital protocol on digital trade, right? I have not laid my eyes on it so far. I do not think it's been made available to the public yet. I mean, if you have it, please send it my way. I'll gladly.
Yes. Wait.
I've been looking out for it. What I did read was someone who happened to, I read an article of someone who happened to go through the leaked copy. And essentially what he pointed out was that a lot of those provisions are redundant within context of where the major Web2 companies are and the regulatory dance that they've done over the years. And there have been changes. So one thing I know, that we talked about data protection, right?
Yeah.
Is that increasingly what having data centers within our continent would do is that they would give us data sovereignty. When you force the companies that are coming into Africa to localize their data, and we would have the infrastructure to not just store the data, but also process it as required. So, we're talking at the very least tier three data centers and upward, right?
Yes.
When we have that, capacity, then Africa can begin to speak and be heard while speaking rather. I think there's those are the, if Africa could garner itself as a collective, there's so many things that could, that we could do. Now, there are a number of other protocols under the AfCFTA that are crucial to its growth. Trade in goods, trade in services, women and youth in trade, protocol on investments, intellectual property. Now, everything, by the time they begin to, people begin to function through these protocols, they're all in tandem. They weave seamlessly through each other. And for example, you have someone who has an e-commerce platform, right?
Yes.
You have an e-commerce platform, and maybe you have to, you set it up as a trade company under, you know, ALP, under the AfCFTA, enable you to engage in trade, and you send your goods to other countries that have submitted their instruments of ratification. And within each protocol, there's still a number of documents that each country needs to submit, right? I think so for trade and services, you have an instance where there are, I think, 22, only 22 countries have submitted those documents. And why that is why trade and services are important is, it will enable mutual recognition of professional capacities across various African countries. So when you combine all those with a digital trade policy, right, the digital protocol.
Yes.
What you would likely begin, you begin to venture into a space where South Africa is going into right now, because they have this digital nomad visa that they recently passed into law. I'm not sure if it's a bill. Yeah, I think they passed it into law recently earlier this month, or late last month. And there's some backlash because people are saying, oh, well, they put the limit as if you're making up to over $53,000 per annum, as a, you know, a technology professional, whatever, then you can, you know, that's what qualifies you for it. But within that, you have tax benefits and housing, that sort of thing will cause housing prices to go up in your economy. there's such a broad ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
And the terms of one thing always feed into the next. Which is, this is the issue I'm having. I'm trying to keep it in one place, right?
Now, please shoot these, for you.
I just decided to highlight some of these issues, right? I wish I were able to speak more in depth about the digital protocol itself. Unfortunately, I haven't seen it. And I don't think it's publicly available. And I reiterate, if you happen to have a copy, please send it my way. I will gladly consume it.
Yeah. Yes. So, I wish we had more time, and I believe in the future we will invite you as well, because there's so much you are able to share with us. Thank you very much for your time today. And just one last question in a few seconds of your time again. What advice would you give to current law students preparing to practice law in a technology-driven world?
Learn the technology. Learn about it. Study about it. If you have to, I say you have to like it, right? But if you want to do it, if you know this is what you want to do, right, you need to love it at least to some extent. To be fair, if you don't love it, it doesn't mean it's going to go away. What I find is, like I said before, lawyers strong arm things they don't understand into what they do understand. And maybe it's not just a lawyer thing, but people would tend to do that as well. In general. So study it. They don't teach these things in school. Like I studied cyber law, right? And this was in 2016. At the same time, right? History was being made with the Ethereum blockchain because that was the first time it experienced a major hack, which, led to an existential crisis for the platform, right? I think someone was able to identify a bug in the code and stole the equivalent of $63 million off, equivalent in Ethereum coins, ETH, right? And it led to a hard fork. A hard fork is when there are fundamental changes to the core protocol of any blockchain infrastructure. So, which is why you have, say, an Ethereum Classic and Ethereum, which is the popular one that most people know today, right? We all do. Not most. So, why I say this is because this was happening in 2016 while I was still studying cyber law. My cyber law lecturer never once mentioned blockchain technology. The thing I found out on my own and threw myself into it. So key thing above all else is to stay curious, because if you say you want to go to school to study about, this new technology, trust me, by the time you graduate, most of what you know would be history, right?
Yes.
So listen to podcasts. I know some resources are good, like blockchain.com has a good podcast, and they update it daily. Wall Street Journal, they have a number of series, so there's the Tech Journal, and there's the there's one on the future that Wall Street Journal does again. These are podcasts, so if you spend your time in traffic, listen to these. If you can't afford to sit down to read, then you can just listen. Watch YouTube is a major resource. No, you're not wasting time unless you decide you want to waste time. There's so many educational resources on YouTube. And Google is there, right? So the semantic web is even... let me not even go there. Let's just stop. But just start with... I think.
Thank you very, very much. I mean, be curious... and read, or else what you know will be history by the time you're done. Thank you very much, Mr. Thompson. I mean, your time and expertise is valuable in starting this journey and in inspiring young people to also, hop on and be part of this transformation that is ever evolving and very fast, by the way. At the speed of light, I should say. So from RCLI, thank you, Mr. Thompson. And that will be it from the Center for Law Innovation podcast. We're very happy to have hosted you. Thank you for your time. And we'll be very excited to invite you again in the future. we're always curious, and we'll get other people to be curious by listening to this. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was amazing. Very good time. Thank you, Sil. Thank you, Geoffrey.
Thank you very much.